Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and we finally reached the closing week of the summer transfer window. Premier League clubs have spent more than their German, Italian, Spanish, and French counterparts combined, and they are not done yet. Don't miss any of the twists and turns with myself, David Ornstein, Adam Crafton, and many more on the Athletic Football Podcast this week as we take you inside the deals that really matter. We're free to listen wherever you get your podcasts, and we're ad-free on the Athletic app.
Okay, so four times in the last six league games, City have fallen two goals behind at some point. In days gone by, that would have yielded at most 1 or 2 points. But these days, City have come away with eight of the buggers. Only 4 points dropped across games where City were 2-0 down at West Ham and playing badly, 2-0 down against Aston Villa and playing badly, 3-1 down against Newcastle and playing badly, and 2-0 down against Crystal Palace and, you guessed it, playing badly. So maybe things have changed, or maybe City should stop giving the opposition a two-goal head start just in case they haven't. Let's get into the finer details of that on this week's Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. With me is Sam Lee.
Hello.
And Paul Byas.
Hello.
You can read everything on City and more in The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/mancitypod to sign up. You'll get these podcasts without the ads as well. You can sign up at theathletic.com/mancitypod. And we've got a little bit of kind of breaking news to start with that you can read all about on The Athletic right now. Sam, City might not be done in the transfer market. Guardiola was asked in his press conference ahead of the Nottingham Forest game to basically say if City were done and dusted in the transfer market now. This is what he said.
Just 1 or 2 days, finally, the transfer window will be over and everyone will be focused what they have to do.
Can you categorically say no more business for yourselves?
No, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
So that was Guardiola in the press conference on Tuesday. Sam, we believe that they're after a centre-back.
Well, yeah. They're, Manuel Akanji from Dortmund. Paul has been sniffing around it for a few days. I got a call this morning saying they're going to sign a centre-back. I was like, what the fuck? So I spoke to Paul. We got a couple of names. We narrowed the name down to one. From the info I got this morning, spoke to David Ornstein. He was on top of it as well. And I, within about 4 minutes, going from this is all the info we've got, not really sure, it was then, right,
we've got a story.
Deal agreed, let go kind of thing. And then it was just kind of thrashing it out as it goes along. So yeah, definitely breaking. And I mean, within about 5 minutes of the story going on Twitter, we're here doing this podcast. So Paul, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a busy couple of hours, maybe. Basically, it's been a deal that I think it's been cooked during the last week. Basically, after Nathan Ake got injured at Newcastle, City is now facing like this period of the season when they have three games per week, and they just have two first team senior centre backs. As we know, Pep doesn't like that, given as well all the problems that he's had at centre-back at City. Basically they started like last week considering like an option to be like a backup centre-back, knowing all the problems they have in this position with Nathan Ake injured. Aymeric Laporte is due back on September, but he has this kind of injuries, like a knee injury, that they want to be careful with that, because if you put like two load and just too many games before it's rightly fixed, probably it can end up with like collateral injuries, like I don't know, like a hamstring muscle injury or just some kind of injury. So they want to be careful with Laporte. They have Nathan Ake injured, and with all the games coming, they felt that they need another center back basically to fill that gap of 20 games per season where he can be useful. And Manuel Akanji came up basically as a good option for them. His contract is expiring at Dortmund next. Well, this is his last year of contract at Dortmund, basically. And yeah, it was an option that ticked all the boxes that City were looking from last week, basically.
Is he coming in then in as a very sort of Nathan Ake style signing, Paul?
I think so. I'd say so. Of course, he will have the chance to prove it wrong or just to change his status inside the pitch. But yeah, I think that as of now, he comes like as a, yeah, just a guarantee for City, just a backup option, just to know that now if some misfortune hits City again and Ruben Dias or John Stones, let's hope it doesn't happen because you never want any player to get injured. But if one of them gets injured, City is basically quite affected in the back line. Because if you put, I don't know, Kyle Walker as a centre-back, then you have no one to put on the right-back. And if you put Cancelo on the right-back, on the left-back, it's a bit, yeah. So it's a bit, they're a bit short. Basically they wanted like another player to feel more safe. And I think that it's also safe to say that if we have to imagine which role Akanji will play right now, it would be closer to Nathan Ake than to Ruben Dias to say something.
Sam, what shape would this leave the squad in though when Laporte is back and when Ake is back and you've got five senior centre backs fighting for two positions essentially?
Yeah, it's unusual. It's unusual. Again, like me and Paul were talking this morning, and I mean, this is basically Paul's point. I hadn't thought about it, but I know he's just talked, so I'll take over. I'll give him the credit for it. Like if City had signed Cucurella, then you play Cucurella left back, you play Cancelo right back, fine. You play Walker centre back, not brilliantly fine, but okay. But now you can move Cancelo to right back, you can play Walker centre back as he did against Barca. But as much as Gomez is kind of exciting, you know, when he was signed and when he was in the process of being signed, all the noise and the talk was that he'd be moved on loan possibly, or at least the City were looking for somebody else. So while he is a very exciting player and I've written about him looking good and I'm quite excited to see him, he's not considered, you know, ready to go in and play left back in the Premier League like Cucurella would have been. So it's kind of knock on from that. And, you know, normally everything City do is kind of considered and you know, I suppose it doesn't necessarily make sense from the outside, but as soon as you hear the logic for it, it does. I'm sure once you hear the logic for this, you know, as kind of we've already explained, it will make more sense. But you're right, like once everyone is fit, not everyone's going to be there. And it's a bit like a January signing, isn't it?
Yeah.
When in the, you know, like when Fernandinho was playing centre-back a couple of years ago, it was like, I'll sign somebody now. And I remember making the point recently that, do you remember a couple of seasons ago when Liverpool had Van Dijk injured and they brought a couple of guys and they, just to reinforce the position at centre back, but they never did anything. I think one went on loan to Norwich, one went on loan to Sheffield United the next season. They'd just shown that they weren't ready. So even if Akanji is ready, and it seems that Dortmund are fairly desperate to get rid of him, although there's other kind of data and stuff we'll explore in articles over the next couple of days that suggests that, you know, it'd be a good signing. But regardless, yeah, five centre backs. Not normally something that City do. Five senior centre-backs, and okay, it's not like all of them are expecting minutes, but Akanji is just coming in. He's going to expect some minutes. And Ake, obviously, nearly left in the summer because, oh, let's go and play somewhere else where I can play a bit more. Okay, there's no offer, so I'll stay. But he won't want to play less. It's an interesting one.
And now you've got this position where you've got an extra player fighting for those places, unless they actually do that thing of switching to a back three and playing Phil Foden left wing back. That could just be the option that they go with. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being facetious.
Yeah, and then Cancelo will be delighted to be missing out. It's a weird one, isn't it?
Just on Akanji, Paul, I don't know if you know much about him or if you've kind of seen how he might fit in, but like it seems an odd one for City to just for it to just kind of come out of the blue in this sense, because the Nathan Ake injury happened, well, nearly a fortnight ago. It's like 10 days ago now. So like if they've been thinking about it for some time, have they been scouting around lots of names and that's where they've landed, or has it just been kind of like a patch-up job, do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know him like very, very well. I've seen him play every now and then, but not like really specifically or especially to him. But yeah, for my understanding is that, yeah, basically this idea came up last week, basically. City were kind of, well, of course they were okay with the number of center backs that they had, but yeah, seeing Nathan Ake injured made them realize that they could be like in big trouble if they got another center back injured. Plus, Ruben Dias comes from like, he has recovered from an injury that was also like an injury, but he has had like some groin problems as well. They want to be careful with the load management. It's a bit like that, I guess. And the center back is so much like a pivotal role for Pep that they just wanted to make it sure. Yeah,
it would seem odd that he didn't fit the profile, though, if they were going to go out and spend money on it. Do we know what a fee is or anything like that? Has there been any news on that?
Yeah, I mean, it should be in the region. We don't have like a specific fee because they are like reaching or getting close to an agreement, but it should be close. It can be a bit less, it can be a bit more, but close to the 20 million of euros.
Oh, so it's not they're not kind of splashing the cash on this.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's like a budget acquisition. It's like having Rodrigo from Ligi in your fantasy team, right? Because he's cheap and he scores goals. Yeah. Just apart from all the jokes. He's kind of like a market opportunity, I guess. They weren't looking like for a like an elite profile. I think that since last week, what they were looking for was for a center back that could be okay for 15, 20 games a season. And that's why, I guess, what they believe they have with Manuel Akanji.
Yeah. And of course, Sam, the wild card in all of this is the World Cup, isn't it? Because you don't know what shape the squad's going to be in the other side of the World Cup. So,
No, I suppose not. But then you don't just go and sign another striker. Like, you don't just go and sign Danny Ings because, you know, you don't know what the squad's going to look like. Yeah, I mean, like I answered before, and it was a fairly long answer, a bit rambly, I guess. I mean, yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. It makes sense in terms of the cover, but yeah, when cover is no longer needed, I wonder. So obviously, look, this is something we've only just put out very recently, and we're going to get more details. You know, might get phone calls as this podcast goes along. But I wonder what kind of contract it is, like how long. You know, is there some kind of, I wouldn't say CFG, but is there some kind of, if it gets to next summer and you're not playing much, we will find you a good
loan, move,
or yeah, we will find you a good move, or you know, maybe they sell Ake for 40 million next summer and they keep him, you know, that these kind of things. But in terms of the World Cup, yeah, maybe it'll help, but I don't know how much that will factor into it right now.
Yeah, and always good to weaken your Champions League opponents before you get there, I guess.
Well, yeah, if he was playing.
Yeah, that's it. That's the point. Yeah,
sign Jude Bellingham if you want to do that.
Yeah, well, we've heard no news on that, so we'll keep you updated if that one comes through. Let's talk about the games recently, because I want to talk about, as the introduction suggested, what we were originally going to talk about was kind of City coming from behind. We've talked a lot in the past about sometimes how you can just get a sense that City aren't getting a result. And I'm wondering, Sam, if that's changed these days. Because in all of those four games that I mentioned in the intro, you know, West Ham, Aston Villa, Newcastle, and then Crystal Palace, City's performance was the classic, well, they're not getting anything from this. And then they've come away with 8 points out of 12. So, like, they're obviously doing something right. I'd rather they didn't keep giving a two-goal lead to the opposition. But, like, they're doing much better than they've ever done before at turning that around.
That's basically exactly what Guardiola said at the press conference. He even said, like, a couple of years ago, when we were down, I got the feeling that we struggled to turn it around. It was something along those lines.
Can I just say at this point, I promise you, I haven't listened to the press conference yet. So me and him are on the same wavelength. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, you'll take that. and then again, at the other end, at the end of the answer, he was like, yeah, but it's not good because we won't always turn it around. You're spot on.
We had to try to avoid it. In one term, it's good because in the past, in the last years, always when we were down, we were difficult to come back. Now we had we proved last season, this season we can do it, but we have to try to avoid it as much as possible to go in vantage and try to handle or manage this situation.
The positive is you've lost none of those four where you have trailed by two goals.
Yeah, but it's risk. So one day we'll not be able to come back.
We talked about it at the end of last season, didn't we? I remember tweeting about it the day after the Villa game, in that Villa game, people are going to start believing that City can turn it around now, the way they did against Villa in particular, but I guess also West Ham. Because, yeah, they're just the amount of games. We could probably talk about 5 or 10 minutes just listing games from that 2019-20 season where you just think, forget it. It's not happening. There were loads of them. And
the absolute standout is the Champions League final. The minute that kicked off, I was like, they're just not getting a result. It's not happening. And lo and behold, that was the performance.
That was a good season as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The one that I always remember is Arsenal in the FA Cup semi-final behind closed doors. It was just like, forget it. They took a corner into the box and it kind of bobbled around and maybe hit Sterling or something from like 2 yards out. It didn't go in. I was like, forget it. Not happening. And that's not what City were known for, you would say. But one thing, it was definitely a trait that, I don't know, 8 times out of 10, the game would go well for City. And considering, no other team has got a ratio like that, 8 times out of 10, that's as close as good as you're going to get, maybe even 9 times out of 10. But that one time when it didn't go well, it was just a write-off, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't like, they've lost 4-3 or whatever. It was, they've just, they were there, as Guardiola says, but they might have had more XG, but they didn't look that threatening and conceded a goal on the break and we're never going to score. And all of a sudden now that has changed. And okay, maybe they have a performance like that again when they play badly and they lose and they don't look great. But, I mean, certainly the evidence suggests that they have moved away from that. And as you and Pep Guardiola rightly say, it has changed. As for why, I don't know, belief in the group. I wonder if Haaland's factor on Saturday in particular helped. You've just got some, the header was a goal that nobody's scoring last season, I would say. Even, his hat-trick goal, I don't think anybody in this City team is scoring that. So you've got a bit of Haaland factor. But obviously a bit of belief from the back end of last season and just like a kind of, I don't want to say incredible group of players, because 2019-20 was after they'd won 2 titles on the bounce and the domestic treble. So they were incredible then. But I guess like most of them have been together for a long time now and they're just kind of very sure of themselves and what they need to do.
Yeah. And I also think that time has made some players. I mean, Pep insisted a lot in Bernardo being a winning player right now. So I guess that time has made a lot of players, this kind of winning players, like that in the bad moments, they just ask for the ball and they just try to solve problems. I think that Kevin De Bruyne did that at some point at the end of that season. He made a step forward in that regard. Bernardo, of course, did it this last game.
Yeah, and Grealish against West Ham last season was big.
Grealish against West Ham. Yeah, that's a good shout as well. And I think that it was quite telling that, of course, we know that Pep is obsessed about tactics and always trying to find the right way just to destroy the opponent, of course. But I think that now City is they take account a lot on the momentums. Because on the last game, Pep was ready basically to put Gundogan and Julian on. And as soon as they were ready to come in, Bernardo scored. Bernardo scored the goal and Pep said, wait. I'm not going to make my changes. He just told Gundogan and Julian just to wait because he felt that as soon as City scored, they were able just to grab this momentum and just to score another one. Then I think that Bernardo did that move that was Messi-esque, starting dribbling everyone that was almost a goal. And they didn't end up scoring, but Pep could feel that once City score a goal, they are able to produce danger into the opposition box. So that's something that is within the squad right now. And it's even with Pep that it's even able or capable just to wait on his thoughts, on his tactical changes, just to give it out to the momentum, basically.
Yeah, absolute Momentum FC at times this season, because they're just in some respects, Paul, I genuinely think City haven't had such a great start to the season in the way they've been playing, but when they've needed the momentum to swing, they've turned it around and they've just bullied the opposition. I mean, against Crystal Palace, it was Haaland bullying them for 15 minutes that ultimately did it.
Yeah. It could be that way. I think that, especially probably against Crystal Palace, on the first half, I think that City has struggled with Walker inside. They didn't find the right solution. But yeah, I mean, it's been probably due to individualities that they have been able just to win or turn around some games. And I think that Pep is quite aware of that because of the way that, he spoke in the press conference after the Crystal Palace game. And I think that he said that today as well, that he tried to warn out his players, saying like, one day we're not going to be able to turn it around, so we have to be careful. And probably the fact of conceding so many goals probably is like a motivation to look for Manuel Akanji too. So yeah, maybe it's good to have all these reasons into account.
Yeah, a bit of a kick up the arse for the players that keep conceding the goals, I guess.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Sam, the other side of all of this is, like, as much as I was going to suggest that one of the reasons why City keep having to turn around a two-goal deficit is because they've changed slightly from last season, given obviously they've now got Haaland in as the centre forward. They're not playing the false nine. There's maybe not as much control. But the ball possession that they've got is still just as high as it was. And, I mean, two of the four games that they've had to turn around were the back end of last season. So I wonder if I'm stretching on that. I wonder if it is just, like, the sample size is too small, that we're looking at a stretch of four games in six where it's happened.
Yeah, it looks like a lot, but you're right. I think if you dig into it as well, there are different reasons for it. Like, the reasons for City conceding goals against Palace and Newcastle were completely different. Broadly speaking, against Newcastle, there was problems on the counter attack, and it's because the team were too stretched out and they were kind of attacking too fast and not slowing the game down. Against Palace, it was just purely set pieces, and there was a couple of problems on the transitions. In fairness, then they were kind of attacking too quickly. Paul mentioned the Walker thing in midfield, but it wasn't just Walker, Cancelo and Rodri actually trying to get the ball forward too much. We spoke to Rodri afterwards in Mixzone. I was like, what changed at halftime? He was like, look, it doesn't always have to be tactical. You know, sometimes we just need to kind of calm down and stuff. And we were rushing. And that's kind of what I thought. Like, whether it was saying, stop playing these passes, or he just said, calm down and you take more time, and not directly say, stop playing these direct passes, but more, take your time, you know, play them out wide, whatever.
Well, they did. I mean,
so whether
second
it was
half,
explicitly conveyed or not, I don't know. But
yeah, because first half, they did spend a lot of time looking for Haaland over the top and very rarely finding him. And then second half, they just didn't do that. I don't really remember that ball over the top.
No, it didn't. It didn't happen once. Walker was much better. His passes were just out wide to normally Bernardo, but obviously people were kind of popping up on the right. It was just much more structured. So I guess there's similarities in that respect. But against West Ham, it was counter attacks as well. But it was like terrible defending, wasn't it? Like, you know, I'm a big fan of Zinchenko, but that was one of his worst games. Villa was just, I don't know, strange. I suppose the more I'm talking about it, the more I'm seeing a theme with counter attacks. There was a question put to Pep in the press conference. You know, are you conceding too many goals? Are you conceding more goals because you're attacking too much? And Guardiola kept his cool with it, but he was like, "You're asking me this after 6 years. Like, if you ask me this in the first one or two seasons, I understand. But after 6 years, like, we always attack like this, and we always concede few goals." So he sees no correlation there. I guess if the question had been maybe worded, you know, are you playing a bit more directly? Are you trying to get Haaland in? And then that feeds into what Guardiola said after the Newcastle game. You need to finish the actions. You know, when you've got space in between the lines and you can run, you need to finish the actions and it's fine. I think if it maybe tapped into that, I think Guardiola might have gave a different answer with maybe a bit more insight to it. I definitely think that's part of it. But again, they weren't looking for Haaland last season.
Yeah,
they just kind of had problems with various different things. But yeah, ultimately, it was set pieces against Palace, counter-attack against Newcastle. Didn't concede anything against Bournemouth, really. Didn't concede anything against West Ham. West Ham was just an absolute masterclass in not letting a counter-attacking team
counter-attack. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see as the season goes on. But again, with this whole centre-back depth thing, all of a sudden it's like Sevilla away, Spurs at home, Dortmund at home. It's like, hold on a minute, these are serious games. So
yeah, I was going to say, good job that Spurs isn't coming up, because that's the test, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that will be interesting.
Yeah, Paul, I also wonder if the fact that City have now done it four times, if like you kind of get into that mindset as an opposition player that it's happening again. You know, as soon as City scored to make it 2-1 against Palace, I kind of wonder how many of the Palace players on that pitch were going, "Oh God, it's happening! It's going to happen again today." That kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, I really think so. It's a bit, I mean, I think that teams, when they play at Anfield, it's kind of something similar. And with all the, I know, all the narrative and all the, with the atmosphere FC and all this kind of stuff, but in their own way, City has done it. City has been able just to assemble a team and just to push their players just to build that, this kind of identity or mentality that when they score one, I think that you could sense it on Crystal Palace, because Crystal Palace was quite brilliant on the first half. I think that Eze was great. The centre backs were like kind of holding Haaland quite good. They were finding like a good escape onto the channels of the full backs. But in the second half, they were just like powerless, basically. They just didn't have like any clue, any idea of how to operate. And I think that's down to this fear factor that City is building, which is a good thing for City. Probably City was a team that was too perfect, like they wanted to play so perfect and they used to win games so perfectly. And now they are doing it like in a way that is less Guardiolistic, but just more effective, maybe.
Yeah. Did you just call City rough around the edges?
Not really. No. Just don't twist my words a bit.
Just specifically against Palace, then, Sam. What did you think of Guardiola's move in the second half? Because I sitting in the stands, I thought it was very brave to take off Cancelo as a fullback and bring on another midfielder and a forward and just kind of reshape the team in that sense. But I guess he could look at it and go, Palace aren't getting forward in this half, so why do we need all of the defenders on the halfway line?
Yeah, and you've got to go for it. Like, what's going to happen if you don't? You lose. You might maybe concede another one, but you know, maybe you don't get the goals. So yeah, it wasn't Cancelo's best game. To be fair, it wasn't De Bruyne's best game either. When it was 2-0, and as Paul said earlier, the subs were getting ready to come on when it was 2-0. It was like, who could come off? Like, it could be anyone. And not necessarily in a they're all shit way, but just in a it could have been anybody. I even for a second I was like, would you take Haaland off and like put Alvarez on, because like he's not getting the ball, and then you get Alvarez to drop and link up play a bit more. Obviously that wasn't going to happen, and in the end that was the right decision not to. So yeah, it's just one of those where changes did need to be made. As you can see, a quite clear difference in the matches where Guardiola does want to make changes and when he doesn't. Obviously against Newcastle, that was just a match where partly owing to the options on the bench and mainly because it was just so frantic and just mad, you couldn't really bring somebody into it cold, in Guardiola's view. But obviously the game the other day, 2-0 down, you need to change things, you need to do something different. You need guys with that kind of sense of goal, if we're talking about Gundogan and Alvarez, which we haven't seen yet, but I'm sure it's there. And also just that ability to kind of make things happen, which Alvarez seems to have already. It did make sense. But I mean, it was a risk in terms of, like, I saw Guardiola speak to Foden a few minutes before the subs, and I was like, okay, yeah. And it was, oh, he's obviously told him he's going to have to go and play left back in a minute. And he didn't have to do much defending, but I remember from like a goal kick, he was standing on the halfway line waiting for it. They kind of played it out into that kind of Kyle Walker position, if you know what I mean, where Edison kind of clips over when Walker's the free man, kind of about 15, 20 metres inside his own half. Palace kind of did that, and Foden just pushed up on him straight away and won it back, and it was like, that was really good. So there was a risk there, but you're right. Palace weren't counter-attacking at all in the second half. That had kind of gone. So, yeah, Guardiola just had to kind of choose the best way to take advantage of that, and because he's the best around, he managed it.
Yeah, I just wonder, Paul, if that's... I guess you probably wouldn't start with that, but it seems to be an option when teams have got a back five with four in front. It seems to be an option of a way to outnumber them in the middle, because... Like I know Guardiola likes you know more passes and that sort of thing to break opposition down. But when you've got effectively a bank of nine players who are not budging, it's quite hard to pass your way around them. So I guess just getting more players in there is the difference.
Yeah, it's kind of a tricky one because of course Guardiola and City, they always want like an overload inside, and that's something they're looking for like since Pep is here. That's why Walker is like playing as a false double pivot, something like that. And they want to do that. But at the same time, I mean, you don't want to like run too much, or basically what Pep said after Newcastle, he wants to be like kind of not slow, but yeah, just taking care of the ball, make more passes, just to not allow the game to go crazy. So that's another thing that City cannot like be crazy about, trying to take advantage of the opposition when they are like bad structured, because they also want to take care of their own position. So it's a bit, they will have to handle it. They will have to find their own ways, basically. And I think that it's kind of a process, and it is kind of still like sorting out which is like the best way or the best movement or the positioning of the players in this new system that I think that will stay, especially with Haaland playing as a number nine. Another, like, I think that it's quite interesting thing is that from the four opposition teams that City has faced this season so far, three of them were like back five defenders on the back. I think that only Newcastle, was it? No, only West Ham was like the only team that played with a back four. So probably that shows like a trend that like future teams are going to play out against City, basically. Just play a back five and put a guy just next to Haaland and just hope for the best. So I think that City will have to keep improving like and exploring new ways, knowing that most of the opponents are going to play with a back five.
Yeah, there was a story this week, Sam, that opposition managers have been calling each other to try and work out how to stop Haaland. I like the idea of it kind of like being like him being such a threat that that there's kind of this unity across every other team in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people going, "Oh no, surely not." But it's just one of those things. Without doing down the information, because it's fantastic information, it's just one of those things that is completely normal when you think about it. But as soon as you write it down, it sounds mad.
Sounds
controversial,
yeah.
But it isn't. It's like, I don't know who it would be. But let's say Eddie Howe and Scott Parker are mates and they were talking about it and they've gone, "Oh yeah, what should we do?" Because, "Oh, well, we tried this and it was unbelievable." You know, the strength of the guy. And just to bring in, actually, I was speaking to somebody like involved in the Palace kind of first team setup like, directly after the game on Saturday. I've tried not to swear too much in this podcast, but I think it would do it justice if I did. So if you're listening with kids, I'll maybe like skip it on for like 30 seconds. But I was speaking to him and basically the whole conversation was just like full of swearing. And I can't remember exactly every line that was said, but the one that sticks with me from the guy at Palace was, "We've got good centre backs, but fuck me." And that's about playing against Haaland. It was just, "He's an effing animal. He's effing unbelievable. Like he's unreal. Like the strength, like all of this, all of these things." So like the idea that like two coaches who have probably done coaching badges together, or, you know, David Moyes speaking to, I don't even know who it could be, but just having like an informal conversation about, "Oh God, this guy's unbelievable." It's like when City signed him, I remember writing that, you know, Liverpool players had said, "Oh, it's a nightmare." I think it was a nightmare or something like that. And I had some Liverpool fans messaging me going, "Oh, how do you know that? Bullshit. It can't be true." And it's like, well, like, think about it for a second. City already beaten them to the title, or were beating them to the title at that point. And then the prospect of Haaland coming, which everybody in the football world basically thought, well, this is the one thing they're missing. He's going to make them amazing. Why would Liverpool players be any different to that? And why, in like informal conversations, like, oh, that's the last thing we need. You know, we're in this golden period trying to win trophies.
And they've just got to sign him.
They've now gone and got even better. It's one of those things where it's just completely normal. And all of those three examples, the Liverpool thing, the Premier League managers thing, and the Crystal Palace thing, all comes back to the fact that he is just unbelievable. Like, it's that thing I wrote about when I went to his hometown. Like, he wasn't big and strong and massive and powerful when he grew up. He was like a player with like unbelievable movement and wasn't strong and wasn't big. So he actually had to get around defenders, big physical defenders who are older than him and bigger than him, and in like the under-18s for Norway or whatever. He had to get around them in different ways. And he could do it because he was that good of a poacher. And then since then, he's become this like physical freak. And like the thing that De Bruyne said the other week after the Bournemouth game, I think we mentioned, what surprised you about Haaland? And he was like, the pace. He goes, that ball from Gundogan against West Ham, I didn't think he was going to get it. And he did. It's these things, like this unbelievable kind of physical specimen allied to like this unbelievable finisher. And it's no wonder that all these people are talking about him in just kind of basically in the kind of ways that we do. Because what can you say? Yeah. Guy's unbelievable.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Paul, there is a question to be asked about Haaland, though, at the moment, because Guardiola said a few weeks ago, just on Haaland's fitness, that basically when City start having a game every 3 days, that Haaland isn't going to play and that Alvarez will come in. Sam tweeted earlier today, City's run of fixtures, which is Forest at home, Villa away, Sevilla away, Spurs at home, Dortmund at home, Wolves away. Haaland probably can't play all of them, but a lot of them are key games. So where do you think he comes in and out at this stage? And I'm asking with my Fantasy League hat on.
Yeah, and that's going to be a and that's going to be a wild guess, because, of course, no one let me know so far the tactics tomorrow. But I think that he's not going to play tomorrow, or he has numbers. Or the games tomorrow probably is the one that you could spare to him, maybe, if you can put it that way. Yeah, because you want him like for your first Champions League game. He comes from like the weekend playing almost like the full game. You play at home against a good team, but a team that is like newly promoted. I know for what we hear like from the backroom staff and for what City says that they are delighted with Julian Alvarez. Delighted. You could sense that on Pep's press conference today. So I guess that he would be very happy to give him like an opportunity as soon as possible.
He was, I mean, when he came on as well at weekend, he looked really pushing for that start, didn't he?
Yeah, I think that he hasn't played like a single minute badly for City. In my opinion, he was great at the Camp Nou as well. He was like relentless. He just couldn't stop like running. He's playing like just driving a rocket. He just cannot like stop running, and yeah, I think that tomorrow probably could be like a day for give Haaland a rest. So I'm not putting him as a captain on my fantasy team, to be honest.
Yeah, or at least have a good backup vice captain. Sam, in terms of that run of fixtures, though, as Paul says, Forest might be a good opportunity. I mean, they've started well. They're an interesting proposition for City, but you'd expect City to do well against them at home. I'm also wondering if Sevilla away might be the one, because they've lost both of their centre-halves, and they're not the team that I think City fans will remember from a few years ago in the Champions League. So I'm wondering then if you could kind of focus Haaland on maybe Villa away because it's an away game. You've got Spurs at home and then Dortmund at home.
Yeah, loads of people were replying saying Wolves and Villa. I was like, what? I mean, look, maybe they're right, but like, away games in the Premier League against Wolves, like you can't really break down. Like, no, I can't see him voluntarily sitting out an away game if it's just a kind of, oh, when should we give this guy a rest? You know, as opposed to this guy needs a rest, because if he needs a rest, then he needs a rest.
Yeah.
So I'd be surprised if it was those ones. But then I'm kind of wondering, you know, I've talked about that kind of load management before, you know, when people have been annoyed that City have played a strong team. It's like, well, you know, they missed games in the past, so they need a game here. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to need to miss two of those, because obviously if he's missing, like if City are playing three games a week all season, which I presume they will be, if he's missing one of those, it doesn't really make sense. I wonder if missing Forest might just be the one he needs and then this international break. Obviously, then you go with Norway. But I wonder if it's just... And look, maybe he starts against Forest. But maybe you just miss Forest in terms of you start on the bench, you get on if you need it. Or, you get on for 20 minutes just to keep your load managed. And then the rest of the games, you come off at 20 minutes to go if things are going well. So I don't know, severe away, but first Champions League game.
You want to get off to a good start,
and all that kind of thing. If I had to guess, and it's purely a guess, and you know we might see tomorrow that it's way off. Like I remember when I came back from the international break in April, just before the Liverpool and Atletico Madrid games, and Mahrez was on the bench, and I was like, well, he was on the bench against Southampton as well, so they must be keeping him fresh. And then Guardiola was like, oh, well, he's sad because he didn't qualify for the World Cup. Like, there's a million things it could be, but if I had to guess, I would say. That he would it'd be on the bench against Forest from the start, as a guess, 100% guess, and then come off early in some of the other games.
Yeah. Quick question, Sam. Was the goal that made his hat-trick, was that a next?
I didn't think of it as a next, but yeah, it absolutely is. That finish was, yeah. I think it loses the kind of next factor because it didn't come out of nowhere. You know, he wanted the ball. You could see he wanted the ball. And then he got the ball and he took a touch and he held off the guy. So you could see it building. It wasn't quite out of nowhere. But in terms of the cleanliness of the finish, it ticks that box for sure.
Yeah.
I do love a next. There'll be plenty of them for him.
Yeah, hopefully. And finally on Haaland, Paul, I know this means absolutely nothing, but I just wanted to mention it anyway. Something interesting to note from his first four games. He got two goals in his first game. He got no goals in his second game. He got one goal in his third game and then three goals in his fourth. And that's exactly the same opening four-game run as Sergio Aguero had in 2011. Obviously, it means nothing, but just very nice coincidence.
There you go, then. Yeah. I mean, if City were looking like for a striker just to take over the legacy of Sergio Aguero, I think that in terms of numbers, there are no more persons in the world that are able to put up the numbers that Kun did, and I think that Haaland can. Let's see how it goes. But he looks to enjoy so much scoring, like the way he celebrates the goal.
He looks surprised, doesn't he? I can't explain it.
He's so happy, doesn't he?
But he's so happy. Yeah. He's like a kid. He just gets mad, and you can tell that he just loves it. So yeah, I think that it's gonna keep on that way. And another thing that is important as well is something that Pep highlighted. I think that was quite right. That he doesn't lose the touch of the game. That sometimes, like most players, when they doesn't get really involved with the style and with they don't have like so many touches and stuff, they just disconnect from it. But he's like so switched on the whole game. He just needs
one
touch.
That's one of the things they weren't sure about Aguero, wasn't it? Sorry, I remember Dominic Torrent telling me when they were at Bayern.
Exactly.
And Aguero scored the hat-trick against them. He was like, Aguero could do nothing for 80 minutes and then do that. But like that doing nothing for 80 minutes is not what they wanted. But obviously with Haaland.
Yeah. Basically, Sam explained it better in 20 seconds than me in like 40 minutes.
Sorry.
Yeah. I love the idea. When I watch him wheeling away celebrating, I love the idea. Was it Marco Tardelli who ran off screaming his own name when he scored the winner in a World Cup final?
I don't know if it was his own name.
I know it's the
kind of iconic celebration. Was he saying his own name?
Yeah, I was under the impression that he was screaming his own name like he was a kid in the playground. I just like the idea that Haaland's doing that every time he scored.
I wouldn't rule it out. But it's that mad thing, isn't it? It's like, you just don't like. Phil Foden, yeah, City fan from Stockport. Yeah. It's just unusual, isn't it, that these like big world superstars are growing up as City fans? Like, I think a lot of fans have kind of remarked on that, and obviously like Sergio Gomez as well now with the City shirt when he was younger. Because I've seen rival fans say, "Oh, like, how could this guy be a City fan? It's bullshit, whatever." And then there's pictorial evidence of it. But like, obviously with Haaland, it's just proper like baked in. And it's this thing we talked about before. Like, we're all talking about him as if he's this kind of alien who's just like the best player in the world. And obviously, to an extent, kind of is. But everyone keeps saying he needs to improve as a player. Rodri said it. Pep keeps saying it. But just that joy on his face, like, it's not like, it's not that old Mario Balotelli thing of, oh, it's my job to score goals kind of thing. Like, He loves scoring goals, and obviously loves doing it for City. Like, I don't know. I'd have to check his celebrations for Dortmund, but I think you get that element of joy because he's at the club he supported, which must be pretty special for everyone.
Yeah. Just while we're on the forward line as well, we touched on Alvarez potentially coming in for a couple of games. Paul, you talked before about how basically you don't think he's played a bad minute for City. What do you see his role being going forward? Because obviously Haaland is the main man, and obviously Haaland can't play all the games. Is he likely to be only coming in to replace Haaland as a centre forward, or will he come in games like against Palace more often, do you think, and maybe even start the odd game alongside Haaland as well?
Yeah, I think that they will play together at some point. They will play together. Actually, against Palace, he played as a kind of winger, left wing, somehow, yeah. And I think that for just looking at how Pep speaks about him, he's the kind of guy that is going to make, is going to push Pep just to put him on the lineup. Because he just trains so hard. He's just, yeah, this guy. I mean, he reminds me a bit of what people said about Gabriel Jesus. He's like a guy that just puts like an effort so big with the team that just Pep will have to put him on the lineup at some point because he will deserve it. And I think that, well, City's not like, they don't have like a really bored options up front. So yeah, I think that there will be a gap and there will be a role for Julian Alvarez to play alongside Haaland.
Yeah, I just remember you just reminded me of a story that Sean Gota once told me about Kevin Keegan, where Keegan, for whatever reason, was hell bent on playing his forward line of Fowler and Elka, and obviously that was not good for Sean Gota. And then Gota kept coming off the bench and kept scoring, so his time would get less and less towards the end of the games, in kind of a way to stop him from scoring that many goals. He'd keep coming on later and later, and he'd keep coming on and scoring. And him and Kevin Horlock used to sit on the bench in the kind of first Keegan Premier League season. And Horlock would give him a nudge and say, go on, warm up. Because what happens is when you run out and you start warming up down the side, the fans go, oh, he's coming on. And then they start singing his name. And Keegan must have kept looking at him going, I'm going to have to put him on at some point. I'm actually going to have to go and put him on. Then he'd put him on, he'd score. And he'd go, I can't play my forward line that I've spent so much money on because this boy keeps coming on and scoring. And it just, for whatever reason, I don't think Guardiola is as easily influenced as Keegan would have been in that sense. But a nice little story to kind of echo across the ages of City.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, have you seen that thing, just to bring us right up to modern football, have you seen that thing Atletico Madrid are doing with Griezmann? Like, the clause in his contract is like, they have to buy him permanently from Barca if he plays many games. He makes an appearance of more than 30 minutes. So Atletico Madrid have been bringing him on like 62, 63, 64 minutes.
Yeah.
It's quite funny.
That was the thing with Mpenza at City, I think. I think he basically was frozen out for the final half of his season because he triggered a one-year extension if he played another game. And so, so he never played
again.
Was
that why there was no home goals at home after December or whatever?
No, because it was the season after. It was the Sven season with Mpenza. Goodness me.
Right.
Yeah, those were the days. Final bit of modern football stuff, Sam. Did you see the video afterwards of Guardiola telling John Stones that he was the man?
Yeah, I tweeted a bit about this. There was a compilation. People might have seen it on my Twitter. There was a compilation of Alvarez's performance, but as part of it, you could see Guardiola at the bottom absolutely going mad at Stones for not. I think he was just not playing the pass quickly enough or accurately enough or whatever, and he was going absolutely mad. And it reminded me of when City played Palace a couple of years ago. You know, when City were losing. And then they got it back. I think Jesus and Aguero scored, something like that. And then Palace equalised again at the end. I think it was January that 2019-20 season again. And Stones was just getting it from Guardiola all game. And it reminded me of that. And it reminded me of thinking, is this going to be good for Stones, you know, to have Guardiola on his back to this extent? Because especially back then, that was a time when he was really struggling. And then Guardiola coming in and saying, you're the man or whatever, I think that, you know, it's a way to kind of address that, isn't it? And kind of build that confidence back up. And, you know, probably for Guardiola to say, look, I'm sorry if I was harsh on you for that one ball, but the rest of the game you played was really good or whatever. So, yeah, I would imagine it was along those lines.
Yeah, I was going to say, Paul, Stones could really easily have shrunk into that game after the own goal. I mean, he was not at fault for the own goal, it just hit him. But, I mean, he ended up getting an assist, which, I mean, he was definitely shooting, let's be honest. But he got himself an assist, and City ended up winning the game because of it. So it was a game that I thought he showed quite good mental strength in there.
I think he was the best centre-back on the pitch. I think he was, despite like the own goal. He made like three tackles to Erechi Eze on the first half that were amazing. That probably without those tackles, Eze could have scored like another goal in the first half. And yeah, with the ball at his feet, I mean, we know that probably him and Laporte are, of course, like the best ball-playing defenders, in my opinion, at City. And yeah, if he's able just to keep up like these fitness levels and if he doesn't get injured, he'll have plenty of minutes because he's a really good centre-back.
Yeah, more competition with Akanji though now, won't he?
Exactly. Well, yeah, more competition, but as of now, I don't think that Akanji will be ahead of John Stones.
Yeah. Well, if you want to read some more info on what these guys know about Akanji from Dortmund, then head over to theathletic.com/ManCityPod. You can sign up for £1 a month for 6 months. Just use that code right there. That's the end of this week's Why With Us. Thanks to Sam Lee.
Cheers, everyone.
And to Paul Byers.
Been a pleasure, thank you.
We'll be back with another episode soon, so we'll see you then.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.